According to reports, a U.S. ambassador will soon return to Syria for the first time in 4 years. President Bush recalled the chief U.S. diplomat in Damascus in 2005 amid charges that Syria arranged the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafik Hariri. And that's not the only U.S. difficulty with Damascus. Syria is on the State Department list of nations that support terrorism. It hosts the leadership of Hamas and provides military and political support to Hezbollah. It's Iran's closest ally in the Arab world, gets missiles and reportedly nuclear weapons technology from North Korea, and it's a major route for foreigners on their way to fight U.S. forces in Iraq. So what's changed? If you'd like to talk with the former ambassador to Syria about the difficulties of diplomacy in Damascus, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. Edward Derigian served as ambassador to Syria under Presidents Reagan and Bush 1. He's currently the founding director of the James Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University and joins us from a studio there. Ambassador, nice to have you back on the program.
It's my pleasure, Neil.
And what's the upside of returning an ambassador to Syria?
Well, the major upside is that we have our chief diplomat in Damascus engaging with the Syrian regime at the highest possible levels. That is an essential component of diplomacy, especially in a country that has such an important regional role. When I was assigned to Damascus in 1988 under President Reagan and later President Bush 41, we had a very adversarial situation between the two countries, as we do today, admittedly in a different historic context. But we had major issues, the civil war in Lebanon, the Israeli-Syrian relationship, issues involving Syrian Jewry, etc. The list was very long. But yet we engaged. We engaged in a very direct, authoritative manner with the President of the United States and the Secretary of State fully behind the dialogue. And we were able in that context to achieve results, helping to end the civil war in Lebanon, getting Syria on board our coalition against Saddam Hussein's invasion of Kuwait, getting freedom of travel of Syrian Jews. And the big prize was getting the Syrians and especially then President Hafez al-Assad to agree to face-to-face direct negotiations with Israel. So I am a very strong proponent of dialogue with our adversaries. I support President Obama's initiatives toward dialogue with Syria and Iran, for example. But as long as that dialogue is conducted in a very authoritative and tough-minded manner.
And is there a problem with, obviously relations are pretty hostile now too, that having withdrawn the ambassador and then returning one is seen as some sort of reward by the Syrians for, well, implacable conduct?
Well, the Syrian attitude is you should have never withdrawn the ambassador in the first place. We did not withdraw our ambassador, Imad Mustafa, from Washington. This is not the way to conduct relations, even in difficult times. That's their attitude. They really don't see this as a reward. What the Syrians are interested in is a dialogue with the United States, but they don't want the dialogue to be focused mainly on Iraq, which, of course, is a major interest to us, especially now we're winding down our troop presence in Iraq, and the Syrian-Iraqi border is a very important component of what's going to happen in Iraq in terms of stability or instability. So Iraq is obviously an important part of our dialogue, but they want the dialogue to be, in addition to Iraq, Israeli-Syrian, the bilateral relationship, assessments on Lebanon, and recognizing Syria as a regional power.
Our guest is Edward Derigian, former ambassador to Syria, as the United States plans to return an ambassador to Damascus for the first time in 4 years. If you'd like to talk with him about the difficulties of diplomacy with Damascus, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Ambassador Derigian, one of the difficulties of being an ambassador in a place like Damascus that you may go to a function and then suddenly, oops, there I am talking to a representative from Hamas or Hezbollah, organizations we regard as terrorists.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that, Neil, because one day I was at a reception in Damascus and all of a sudden here I see coming toward me one of the leaders of the Palestinian Front for the Liberation of Palestine, which was really
a notorious terrorist group, yes.
Yeah, and so I had to do a Rudolf Nureyev pirouette and really go in an entirely different direction to avoid shaking his hand, which would have been quite embarrassing. Yes, there have been times where you really have to avoid people who are considered and who are on our terrorist list. So, there are some difficulties like that. But fundamentally, the Syrians are very professional in their conduct of diplomacy, and they see a very real need to engage with the American ambassador. And we sort of hinder our ability by not having an ambassador in place.
I was just about that. We have obviously there's a lesser diplomat called a chargé d'affaires who's left after the ambassador leaves, and that person just doesn't have the same kind of access?
No, not at all, because that person will be relegated to meeting with the chief of staff of the foreign ministry and lesser officials. That person will not be given access as is required, given the importance of the relationship with the foreign minister, with the prime minister, and with the president of the country. And in these countries, for example, when I was there, the president was Hafez al-Assad, the father of the current president, Bashar al-Assad, but he was the decision maker, just as today Bashar al-Assad's the decision maker. And as I account, if I can give a plug for my book, Neil, In
Sure.
Danger and Opportunity, that came out in September, I recount in a couple of chapters on Damascus the intricacies of dealing with your adversaries and dealing with the president of Syria, which was absolutely critical for our ability to get things done, because I, as the American ambassador, paved the way, for example, for Secretary of State Baker to come and do his shuttle diplomacy between Damascus and Israel that led to the Madrid Peace Conference. I think it's foolish, unless in extreme circumstances, to pull your ambassador out of the capital.
Let's get a caller on the conversation. This is Eli. Eli with us from Derry in New Hampshire.
Yes. Hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm a little bit worried as a Lebanese-American. When it gets sour on the Syrian side, it gets sweet on the Lebanese side. So it was sweet for a couple of years. Do I should be worried now if it's going to get sweet on the Syrian side? Do I should be worried like they're cutting any deals towards the Lebanese?
Well, may I answer that question, Neil?
Yeah, please go ahead. I don't have any answers for him.
Oh, okay. Well, there's an interesting anecdote in my book on the chapter on Beirut when I was Assistant Secretary of State for the Near East under President Bill Clinton. And President Clinton's first meeting with the then Prime Minister of Lebanon, Rafik Hariri, who was tragically assassinated, as we know, in 2005, President Clinton turned to me and he said, Ed, what's the most important single message I can convey to the Prime Minister of Lebanon? And I said, Mr. President, we've gone over the talking points, but the most important message you can convey that no matter what the United States does in its negotiations between Israel and Syria on a peace agreement, that will never be done at the expense of Lebanon's political independence, its sovereignty, and its territorial integrity. We will never sell Lebanon on the platter of any Israeli, Syrian, or American deals. And that remains American policy, be it under a Democratic administration or Republican administration. So I would tell our caller not to fear that our rapprochement, if you will, with Syria would be at the expense of Lebanon.
And you mentioned former Prime Minister Hariri. He, of course, was assassinated, which, of course, triggered a great number of events, including eventually Syrian withdrawal, at least a military withdrawal from Lebanon at long last. But nevertheless, the Syrian hand is still widely seen. Most people believe they did it.
Yes, the general presumption has been that, but again, everybody is waiting for the judgment of this international commission, this international court that has been conducting its inquiries for many years. My own personal opinion on that is I hope that court does its due diligence and comes out with its findings, because the absence of a finding is sort of like a black cloud.
Eli, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go next to Lee. Lee calling us from Norfolk, Virginia.
My question was whether we having an ambassador to Syria would help us in any way dealing with the Syrian nuclear program and their supplying information to Iran.
Just to remind listeners, last year Israel bombed a facility in northeastern Syria that is believed by wide report again to have been a North Korean designed nuclear power plant to produce plutonium for nuclear weapons. Ambassador?
Absolutely. Again, here's where an American ambassador can play a very important role in engaging the president of Syria, the chief of state, on this issue and asking the tough questions and probing with his other contacts. When I was in Damascus, it was not only with the president, which was the most important contact, but certainly with the other high-level officials and even people in the Ministry of Defense, the chief of staff of the Syrian Armed Forces, and some people in their intelligence services. So again, the nuclear issue, as the individual who called in, is putting his finger on a very important issue. And in order for us to determine what the intentions of the Syrian regime are on nuclear, their nuclear ambitions, be it civilian or weaponry, it doesn't hurt to have an American ambassador who can have access to all these power players in Damascus.
Edward Djerejian is our guest. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And just to follow up in a general idea, is it a mistake to view the presence of an American ambassador and a U.S. embassy as somehow condoning another government's policies?
Absolutely not. The presence of an American ambassador is not a symbol of condoning a policy. Look, we had American ambassadors in Moscow throughout the Cold War. And look at all the major differences we had with the Soviet Union, including critical ones during the period of the Cuban Missile Crisis. No, it's an absurdity to think that the presence of an American ambassador is a housekeeping seal of approval on a country's policies.
Let's get another caller in. This is Patrick calling from Charlotte.
For your guest about the peace process between Israel and its neighbors, if you view it as a chess game, what would be the next most important move, do you think, that could be made by either side?
And just again to remind listeners, there have been indirect talks of late between Syria and Israel through the good offices of Turkey. Ambassador.
Good question. I think that the prospects of re-engaging the Israeli-Syrian negotiations is very real today and in the immediate future. Ever since the Madrid Peace Conference in 1991, there has been intermittently in Democratic and Republican administrations since real progress made between the Israelis and the Syrians, and the United States has played a key role in that. And Turkey, as you mentioned, Neil, lately has played a very productive role in these indirect talks of late. It is no exaggeration for me to say, but more importantly, it's acknowledged by people who have been involved in these negotiations, that 80% of the major issues of a peace settlement between Israel and Syria have already been discussed in quite a bit of detail. Land, which means withdrawal from the Golan Heights, security arrangements, especially on the Golan Heights area, access of water, and the nature of peace and normalization of relations between Israel and Syria. These issues can be brought forward. The legacy, there's a rich diplomatic negotiating legacy there. It can be brought forward if, and this is a big if there is the political will in Washington by President Obama, by now Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu in Israel, and by President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. If that political will exists, I am convinced that we can make headway on Israeli-Syrian negotiations, not at the expense of Israeli-Palestinian negotiations, but certainly that track can move forward.
I have to ask you a question about that. Again, Syria provides the military and political support for Hezbollah, which Israel just fought a war with a couple of years ago. It is also the host of the headquarters of Hamas, an organization which is virulently anti-Israeli.
Exactly, which gives even more, I think, reason for the United States to be engaging Syria in order for us to try to affect its behavior vis-a-vis Hezbollah and vis-a-vis Hamas, which obviously, as you stated, impact on the Israeli-Palestinian negotiations and on Israeli-Lebanese relations. So, again, given Syria's role, it does host the leadership of Hamas, Khaled Mashal, a major part of the leadership, the political leadership in Damascus, and it does support Hezbollah. So that's even more reason for us to be engaged with them as we look at a comprehensive peace between Israel and the Palestinians, Israel and Syria, Israel and Lebanon.
Patrick, thanks very much for the call. And one final question. We just have a minute left. And do you see that there's any coincidence that this opening to Syria comes at the same time that the United States, well, all of the events going on after the Iranian elections?
Well, I don't think it's deliberate, but it is a coincidence, as you stated. I think the administration's intent from the outset was to engage Syria. And, you know, Senator George Mitchell has been to Damascus, as has been our Assistant Secretary of State other high-level officials. But then the events in Iran have come to the fore. Nobody expected them. They have happened, and they obviously are affecting whatever we do or do not do with Syria.
Ambassador Derigian, thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure to be with you, Neil.
Edward Derigian served as ambassador to Syria under the Reagan and the first Bush administration. As he mentioned, also Assistant Secretary of State for Middle East Affairs in the Clinton administration. Now director of the James Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University in Houston, Texas. He joined us from there today. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday. Ira Flatow will be here with a look at alternative energies, plus an airplane that flies itself. All tomorrow on Talk of the Nation, Science Friday. We'll see you again on Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington.